Thank you very much, B'shus, Rav Madas of Ganak, Nasi Yeshiva, and Dr. Berman, the other Rosh Yeshiva here, Reichman, who may remember many, many years ago used to give shiurim in Teaneck, and I was in high school still, I used to come, and it was really my first exposure to the Torah of the Rav. I had not yet met the Rav, but I heard from Reichman, it was my first exposure. B'shus, Rosenzweig, Neuberger, and of course, our thanks to Ovid Turk. We were in the Rav Shia together, and very fond memories. I was not zochet to see the Rav at the height of his powers. I was there even after Rav Rosenzweig, so it was even later, and it was, I guess, more grandfatherly, to use your words. I was there for 5 years, pretty much the last 5 years he was in yeshiva. But it was impossible not to just be awed by being in his presence. The shiur maybe were not as quite as dramatic, although when he gave the shiur, and I've mentioned the story many times in the past, and it just had such an impression on me, I'll say it over very quickly again. I once had a shaila to ask, and I made an appointment to see the Rav in the apartment, and I don't think Ovid Turk was the shamus that I spoke with at that time, but I had an appointment to see him, and I came into the room at the appointed time, and it was the apartment in the Morgenstern dormitory, and the Rav was sitting. He just had a shirt, didn't have a jacket and tie on, and he had a television cart which had a Shas and a Rambam on it next to him. And he was slumped over, and as I said in the past, it looked like if I blew with enough force, he would fall down. And I thought to myself, why in the world are you bothering the man with this shaila? It was an important shaila, but Baruch Hashem, our yeshiva, as many other outstanding Talmid Chachamim, was not something that necessarily needed the unique insight of the Rav. Could have gone to other people, and I just, you know, I prepared because I didn't want to ask the shaila and be exposed to not knowing what I'm talking about. So I looked into the sugya a little bit, but I was just so thrown off. I asked the question quickly, gave an answer, and I just ran out of there. Less than an hour later, we were up on the fourth floor in the first hall for the shiur. And I was just stunned that this was the same person. He was giving the shiur. He was so animated. He was so alive. I said, you know, less than an hour ago, it looks like it was about to collapse. And the answer is, of course, because the Rav was interested in teaching and his learning and in presenting the shiur. He was just a different person. You couldn't help but be awed. And of course, once you knew what he had written and what he had said over the years, it was just, you know, just to be in the room, to be, I found an unbelievable source. With the Lichtenstein Zichron Levracha, I was zochet to be there in his yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, yeshiva Har Etzion, the year that I was there to be in his shir. I don't remember what the Berman referred to earlier about the last name of the first, but he always called me Michael. Now, I don't think it was because I necessarily said the right answer every time. I'm not saying that. The problem is that that's not my Hebrew name. My English name is Michael. My Hebrew name is Menachem. So I think I once said something to him, but then I just let it go for the rest of the year. But in any event, I was very much taken with him, of course, as a personality. On Fridays, he used to come in. There wasn't regular shiur on Fridays.
Just, yeah. Just 1 second. Yeah. I've been heard and mentioned.
Yeah.
Remember once in the shiur, he used to be bunch of us around the world, and Michal Shirk was there, and he said, Michal.
Yeah.
He always used to call us all by our last name. So I said, Michal.
I don't think that was a case of Lichtenstein with me, but I'm not sure. But I told him once. Anyway, we refer to him as Michal the rest of the year. I let it go. But anyway, but on Fridays, it wasn't regular shiur in the yeshiva on Fridays. And he used to come in and used to give a shiur on Chumash Ramban. Nice to go to that. And then after the shiur, he'd go back to Yerushalayim. And even if he was coming back to Yeshiva Shabbos, he'd go back to get his family, whatever it is. So guys would run to his car, who wanted to go to Yerushalayim, to hitch a ride. He had room for five or six guys in this old beat-up car. And I used to run because I wanted to go. If I had to go to Yerushalayim, fine. Even if I didn't have to go, I would run to get to the car, and assuming no one else needed a ride, we actually had to get there. I just wanted to go in the car and listen to the conversation. You know, and sometimes I got to Yerushalayim, and when I got there, I took a bus back to Yeshiva. You know, but I was just so taken. I wanted to be, you know, exposed and hear what he had to say, because guys asked him questions, as did I, on all kinds of topics. Quite unbelievable experience. And one of the things I consider still a highlight, they inscribed a certain sefer to me years later, and he inscribed it, Lichvod Talmid Vosik. And to have that, inscription in a sefer is, you know, it's a tremendous honor. A lot has been said already, and the hour is a little bit late. A lot has been said already about the similarities and the differences between the Rav Zichron Livracha and the Michnas Zichron Livracha. To me, three things come to mind, again, which were touched upon already. Of course, the absolute pursuit of emes. There was no nonsense. You never got the impression when you asked a shaila or a question in halacha or on a gemara to Rav Lichtenstein or the Rav that they were just giving some kind of a kvetch answer. Just they worked at it. They gave it. It was emes. It had to be emes. It wasn't just a, sometimes you can ask a question, and even in a sugya, and the Rav who's giving the shiur, who's more knowledgeable than the person asking the question, can come up with a creative chav just to, the Gemara has something, expression, we'll answer the. But both the Rav and the Lichtenstein, you really had the sense that there was this tremendous pursuit of emes. There was also tremendous clarity of presentation. Such compelling thoughts, such compelling ideas. You couldn't walk, you were dazzled. When you walked out, just such a compelling thought. And then there was an initial notion, which I think maybe wasn't so touched upon, I mentioned a little bit, was the hard work. Tremendous work ethic on both of their parts. The amount of time that must have had to have gone in, even with the natural brilliance, but they had to go into preparing the shiurim and so on and so forth. The Rav, I actually heard this in the name of Yaakov Weinberg, the Yeshiva, then Smal Rav from Nei Yisrael, that the Rav could, in his younger years anyway, sit for 8, 9, 10 hours. It could have been World War III. It could be going on outside. No distraction. Just sit over something until he worked it out. Tremendous, that hard work and that tremendous kind of discipline. And he also looked at everything each time as it was the first time he was seeing it. I remember when he was Niftar, so as we mentioned, he was Niftar Chol HaMoed, and a lot of people were waiting for Pesach, but the Rav was in Boston, so they had it at YU. A couple of weeks later, they had a Haskara. So one of the people who spoke was his son, Chaim Soloveitchik, and he mentioned the one time he was learning with his father, and he came across the difficulty in the sugya that they were learning, and they were sitting on it for a couple of days and so on. And finally, the son, Chaim, said to his father, Pa, you said shiur in this yeshiva a couple of years ago in this masechta. Why don't you go take a look at your notes? And I still remember the answer. He said, my father looked at me like you would look if you opened a drawer and there were cockroaches in the drawer. That's the look that he gave me. He said, that's not how you learn. You pursue MS, you look at something like it's new, you don't have to check what you said last time. That was also made an impression. I would just like, and I also, again, in terms of his time, there was once a story I heard from somebody who was there, that his apartment, as was mentioned, was in the Morgenstern dorm in YU. So one night, the boys were rowdy or whatever it is. It was quite late. There was a lot of noise. So the Rav came out of the apartment, and he said, gentlemen, it is 2 o'clock in the morning. Don't you realize there are people in this building who are trying to learn? So I'd just like to, in the time I have, just to share a thought, a few things from Rav and Lichtenstein on the topic of Sfiras HaOmer, which, of course, in the middle of the Sfiras HaOmer period right now. The mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer is presented in two places in the Chumash, in Parshas Emor and in Parshas Re. We read both on Pesach. Parshas Emor, Tzitzrat HaNachem Rochos HaShabbos, and so on. Tisbru Hamishim Yom, seemingly a mitzvah to count the days of the Omer. And then in Parshas Re, it says Shiva Shavuos, Tisbaloch, to count the weeks, and so on. And so the discussion in the Gemara, what the nature of the mitzvah is not, there's a couple of pages in Menachos on Daf Samach Vavanav. The Gemara concludes that Abaye and the Rabbanan the Beravashi would count both days and weeks. You mentioned, like we do, count the Sfira, you mentioned both the days and the weeks. And I remember I said they only count the days because Zechel HaMikdashu. So Lichtenstein, in one of his shiurim, quoted the Rishonim, who really have a machlokas as to what that dispute between Abaye on one side, Rabbanan the Beravashi on one side, and the Maimar on the other side is about. That according to one view, the assumption is on a Daraisa level. The Rambam assumes the mitzvah of Sfiras HaOmer remains Daraisa even today. Famously, other Rishonim hold like that. It's a mitzvah Daraisa today, even today in the absence of the Beis HaMikdash. And it's a machlokas really on a Daraisa level. What's actually required? Is it days and weeks that's required, or is it only days that's required? Even in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, certainly on a Daraisa level. The other view is that it's a machlokas on a Darbana level. On a Daraisa level, for sure, you have to count both the days and the weeks. The question is, when the Rabbanan made this mitzvah, Zechel HaMikdash, okay, you could read what our Maimar says, Zechel HaMikdash means, what do you mean? We have to do it, if it's on a Daraisa level, we have to do it like in the days of the Beis HaMikdash. It's a Daraisa today, we have to count. That's one way to look at it. And our Maimar would say, no, Zechel HaMikdash, Mikdash only counted, also in the Mikdash, they counted only the days. And that could be the Machlokas, or it could be on a Darabana level. Meaning the institute of this mitzvah today as a Zechel HaMikdash, no longer Daraisa today, because the Torah links the mitzvah Sfiras HaOmer with the bring in the Korban Omer on the second day of Pesach, there's no more Korban Omer, so the whole mitzvah is Zechel HaMikdash. What exactly does that mean? So there's a different, the Lichtenstein again had two ways Based on the Rishon, of course, two ways to look at that. You could either say, yeah, it's a Zecher LeMikdash, and therefore Amemar says, Zecher LeMikdash, you don't have to be so strict, counting days is enough. And according to Abai and Abon and the Barabash, even though it's a Zecher LeMikdash, okay, we should do the way it did in the Beis HaMikdash and count both. The Rav has a little different take on it. He said, maybe the Machlokas says, what do we mean by a Zecher LeMikdash? What's meant by a Zecher LeMikdash? And the Rav documented there are really two different types of Zecher LeMikdash. You look in the Gemara in Sukkah, the Gemara has regarding taking the lulav the whole week of Sukkah. According to the Torah, you only have to take the lulav on the first day of Sukkah outside the Beis HaMikdash. But the rest of the week, we take it as a Zecher LeMikdash. So the Gemara says, where do we get this idea after the Zecher LeMikdash? The Gemara quotes a pasuk, Tzioni Dorish Eila, Miklal Deboi Drisha, quotes a pasuk that we have to try and, from which Chazal learned, we have to try and replicate what they did in the Beis HaMikdash. At the end of the third parak of Baba Basra on Daf Samech, the Gemara has certain things which we do to remember the Beis HaMikdash. Near the Gemara quotes the pasuk in Eshkachei Yerushalayim Tishkach Yemini that we have to not, we don't celebrate the Rechasana fully, whatever else, break the glass, not mentioned in the Gemara, whatever, those kinds of things. So what's the difference? So the difference the Rav suggested is between the Zecher LeMikdash and Zecher LeChorban. What exactly are we trying to do? The Gemara in Sukkah is to when sometimes we remember the Beis HaMikdash by replicating what they did in the Beis HaMikdash. They took the lulav for 7 days, so we take the lulav for 7 days. And the other time, sometimes we do a dafka, the Baal HaMor raises in the end of Pesachim, why we don't say Shechianu on the mitzvah of Sirus Omer on the first night. So he says, because it's a depressing mitzvah, it reminds us of the Churban and destruction and so on and so forth. Meaning, says the Rav, that's why Amemar said, we dafka don't want to do it the way they did in the Beis HaMikdash, to highlight the absence. We can't celebrate the way they did. We can't do the mitzvah the way they did in the Beis HaMikdash. Dafka. It's not just, well, it's not such an important mitzvah in the same way anymore, so we can get away. No. Dafka. We should do it differently than they did in the Beis HaMikdash. And interesting, because we have the practice that right after we count the Sirus Omer, we say this, Haracham and Yach Zalonas, what is Beis HaMikdash and Koma? It's a beautiful tefillah. Why don't we say that after Kishofer, after, after putting on film, whatever. No, because this highlights the absence of Beis HaMikdash. So that's the Rav said, again, a little different than Lichtenstein, but again, explaining that idea, how we can understand this Machlokas. There is a third sheet there, Ben Yerucham, who's of the opinion that really are two separate mitzvahs. There's a mitzvah to count the days, and a mitzvah to count the weeks. The Rambam entertains that in the Sefer HaMitzvahs. It can't be, because otherwise there would be two brachas. I only have one bracha. Ben Yerucham says, it could be that there are two brachas. And it could be, the Lichtenstein suggested, that really the Rambam and others agree that there are two aspects. Only one mitzvah, there's only one bracha, there are two different aspects. What are the two different aspects? So the one aspect is that it relates to the Beis Din. The Rav pointed out, based on Lichtenstein also said it, based on a Sifrei, that the Safar, it says in Re'eh, it says, Shiva Shavos Tispar Loch, in the singular, not Lachem, but Loch. The Golden Gaon has a principle that a lot of times when it says Loch in the singular, it means, the entity of Klal Yisrael as a unit. Okay, the entity of Klal Yisrael as opposed to when it says Lachem, like Usfartem Lachem over there in Parshas Re'eh, that means that the Hei Surah, L'chol Echad Re'echad, you and you and you, that's Lachem, or L'kachtem Lachem, L'kich B'yad Kol Echad Re'echad, and so on. We have that drosha of Chazal. So therefore, the idea is that there are really two aspects of the mitzvah. There's a mitzvah upon the Bezdin, so to speak, to count. Why the Bezdin? Because the Bezdin is a representative of the entity known as Klal Yisrael. So there's a special mitzvah on Bezdin. Like we have the, Rav pointed out the Chizkuni, the Talmud of Rashpot, the beginning of Bahar, by the mitzvah counting Shemitah years till the Yovel, it says the Sofar to Lecha. So it's the same as the mitzvah on Bezdin. We don't count personally the Shemitah years to the Yovel, but the Bezdin, there's a whole discussion we've shown them there too. With the Bracha, they have to verbalize a different issue, but enough time for that. But Lamaisa, there it means it was job the Bezdin as represented as a Klal Yisrael. Well, that was the theme of the Ravs also. That many times we find the things which are done by the Beis and HaGadol were done in their capacity as the representatives of the entity known as Klal Yisrael. So there's a mitzvah, Sirus HaOmer, that relates to the Beis and as a representative of Klal Yisrael, and there's a different mitzvah upon every individual called Yachid B'Yachid. That's really from the Chizkuni, from the Sifrei. But what's the entity? What's the idea of Beis? What do you need Beis? Why is there a special mitzvah on Beis? So here, the Rav suggested that there are really two things that happen when it comes to Sirus Omer. There's one mitzvah, Sirus Omer, linked to the Korban Omer. You begin counting the days and so on and so forth. But there's also a mitzvah with regards to counting till Shavuos. What do you mean? Shavuos is a unique yantif. Because Shavuos is the one yantif in the Torah that doesn't say the date. The Torah never gives a date for Shavuos. How do we know when Shavuos is? We count the days from Pesach. How do we know when Shavuos is? By all the other Yom Tov, it tells you the date. Okay, so the Gemara actually says in the days of one time, Shavuos didn't necessarily fall out the same day every year. Pam and Behe, Pam and Vav, Pam and Zayin. The Gemara in the beginning of Rosh Hashanah, sometimes the 5th, sometimes the 6th, sometimes the 7th, depends on how the months in between Pesach and Shavuos, whether it were 29-day months, 30-day months, so depending on how it worked out, Shavuos was a different day. Well, I guess it's always the same day, but one time it wasn't. So the idea suggested the Rav was you need a Mekadesh of the Yom Tov of Shavuos. There has to be an act. Now, who's in charge of the Kiddush HaChodesh? That's the Beis Din. Again, acting on behalf of Klal Yisrael, as representatives of Klal Yisrael. They're Koveya, the Chodesh. But Shavuos is not established by Kviyas HaChodesh. It has nothing to do with the Kviyas HaChodesh of Sivan. It's not that. It's what Shavuos is a result of the counting of the Omer. So therefore, the Beis Din has that role of counting the weeks and the and setting up the Yom Tov Shavuos. The Rav had two very quick nafkaminas. One explains this funny position that we have. If a person forgets to count at night, he can count the day and then can, without a bracha and continue. But I mean, either it's how do you work it out with the sheet? It's not so simple. But the Rav said, because by continuing to count during the day, even though you failed to do the mitzvah that night of counting the Omer, the individual mitzvah, but you're still kept alive, right? The idea of counting down to Shavuos. Today we don't have a Beis Din, so all of us take on that role. So you kept that alive. The Rav also, that explains an interesting sheet of the Ramban as a question. The Gira, so the Ramban says the women are obligated to Shavuos Omer. Why? It isn't a mitzvah, say, Shazman Groma. Yeah, that's one aspect of the mitzvah. The idea of Mekadesh Shavuos, they're part of Klal Yisrael too. So then they're still in. And then that maybe explain that Ramban. No, they're not coming in. The hour doesn't permit. I'll just point out that the Rav said this theme of Sibur and Yochid, of our dual obligation as individuals and as part of a tzibur, was a theme of his in many, many areas. Tefillah, tefillas ha-tzibur, tefillas ha-yachid, kapara of the tzibur and yachid, tshuva of the tzibur and yachid, that was of the tzibur and yachid. That was something which the Rav often emphasized, that we really operate as Klal Yisrael in two different realms. We operate as individuals, and we operate as members of the tzibur. That was a kind of a running theme of his. Rav Lichtenstein, just to close, would once asked, what do we think when Rav Akiva, so we mourn the loss of Akiva's Talmidim during the weeks of the Sphere, and we have Avelis and so on and so forth. And the Gemara says that after losing 24,000 Talmidim, Akiva found five Talmidim, went to the south and found five more Talmidim who formed the base of the Torah Shabbat that we have. What was the first thing he taught them? What was the first shir? Remember, Nuber mentioned what the first shir is in the Rav. What do you think Akiva talked about? So Lichtenstein suggested probably he realized what was the problem that caused the loss of the 24,000 Talmidim. So Akiva, probably that was the first lesson that he wanted to impart to those Talmidim, not to repeat that mistake. Now, what does it mean, Shalonogu Kovod Zebezet? They didn't respect each other. So we're looking to distinguish between Kovod and Bizayon. We have that in Halacha, that can be Mochon and Kovod. Parents can be Mochon and Kovod. They came from Mochon and Bizayon. So were they Mefazi each other? They mevaze each other. The Talmidim and Akiva, as they talking, were mevaze. They degraded each other. Chas v'shalom. But onogu kavod. So Lichtenstein said, well, what do you mean? There were 24,000 of them. You have kavod. How many of us have met 24,000 people? How can we emotion onogu kavod zebaze? What do you mean? They have kavod. The answer is perhaps they have kavod for the entity of Klal Yisrael as a tzibur. That was the issue. There's two things. There's kavod for individual, and there's kavod for Klal Yisrael as a tzibur. That was the answer that the Lichtenstein suggested. So just to end off, that was, I think, a theme of Lichtenstein's upon Baruch also. He cared deeply about the tzibur of Klal Yisrael, the problems of Klal Yisrael, as, of course, did the Rav. Many people have probably seen the video. I didn't see this year. Maybe there are people who heard this year. But the Rav said that we American Jews, again, talking about his generation, have to klap al chait for not doing enough to prevent the Holocaust and the loss of the 6 million. It's a very powerful. You heard that. I was not present this year, but I've seen the tape and so on. It's available on video. Okay, it's very, very powerful. He said, and it's written up as well. And you saw that, the angst that he felt and then the guilt that he felt personally that we in America didn't do enough because he cared for the Tzibur of Klai. So I'm looking seen as well. Okay, so many times the things going on in Eretz Yisrael, you felt that, he cared deeply. And not everyone agreed with him philosophically or politically. The point is, you saw that he cared. You saw that he cared not only for individuals, as I mentioned before, but he cared for the tzibur, of Klal Yisrael. That was the defining features. When I was deciding where to go in Eretz Yisrael for yeshiva, so I was waiting to finish yeshivas or whatever, and my father, Allah Shalom, said to me, you should go where you think you're going to learn the best, you think you have chaverim, whatever else. But he said, all things being equal, I'd recommend you go to Lichtenstein Yeshiva because you're not likely to meet somebody like him somewhere else. And it was certainly very, very good advice. And just his personality, his menschlichkeit, things were mentioned before, the hour is late, I won't go in, but it just could not, you could not help but be staggered, really, by the imposing nature. Lichtenstein, as I said before, did not have, in terms of his personality, the imposing characteristics of the Rebbe, but he was an imposing personality nonetheless. And if you got to understand him a little bit, you were dazzled by him the way people certainly were dazzled by the Rebbe as well. And both of them, as was mentioned, Rosenzweig so eloquently mentioned, were links to the great Torah figures of the past. Neuberger spoke about surrendering. I close with the Gemara in Bar Metzia that says there was a machlokas once between the Tanoim and Rabbi Elazar, the famous Tana Dachnoi. Rabbi Elazar disagreed with all of the other Tanoim, and he said, if I'm right, let this miracle happen, the water should flow the other way, and the trees should jump, and all kinds should be a baskol. And it didn't work. It didn't sway the other Talmidei Chachamim, and they paskened against him anyways. Okay, so at the end of the Gemara, somebody asked Eliyahu Navi, what was HaKadosh Baruch Hu's response? Right? And the answer is Nitzchuni Bonai, Nitzchuni. So most people learn Nitzchuni means they triumphed over me, right? That they defeated me. But the Rav said, no. The Rav said Nitzchuni from the language L'dor V'dor L'Netzach Nitzachim. They eternalized me. They eternalized me. Meaning that I gave over to my people, to Klal Yisrael, the way to learn Torah and to develop halacha and so on and so forth. And by keeping it the way they learn, they have eternalized me. And I always felt that having the privilege to learn by Lichtenstein Zichron Lebracha and the Rav Zichron Lebracha, they represented the eternity of Torah. And their approach was to eternalize Torah and to make that palatable to all of us, to all of the Talmidim, Yehi Zichron Baruch.